An African-American security guard at a Madison high school got his job back this week after being fired when he was overheard using the N-word.
Marlon Anderson says actually he was telling a student not to use that slur against him. But initially, the district's zero-tolerance policy didn't leave room for that context.
Here's Anderson talking about the incident with Channel 3 News last week.
My father was called a slur. My grandmother, my grandfather. And keep going on down the family line. We were all called this word, and not one of them could say, don't call me that. I can't. And I shouldn't be punished because I have the right to tell somebody not to call me this word.
Officials now say the policy is under review, but zero tolerance policies have been in schools for almost 3 decades. And our next guest says they've had a lot of unintended consequences.
Jane Close Connolly has been an educational psychology researcher for nearly 30 years. She's currently president of California State University, Long Beach. Jane, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm happy to be on with you.
You've done a lot of work on zero tolerance, worked on studies and statements on it. If you had to sum it up, what do you see as some of the biggest problems with zero tolerance policies in schools?
Well, the first problem I see is that, for example, suspending students for many, and probably most students, that's really not seen as a punishment. They get to stay home, usually unsupervised, and watch TV or go out. So what adults thought would be a, oh, wow, I have to stop that, actually isn't processed that way. Another thing is that we're dealing with young people, even young teenagers. So they're here to learn. And by having a zero tolerance policy, we're not providing a kind of educational, contextual understanding of what has really happened. That's especially true in the example you just shared previously in your program. And finally, there's so many other much more effective ways to deal with students' misbehavior. Now, I would say, of course, there's some things that cannot be tolerated. A child who brings a gun to school must be excluded immediately. And there might be a few other very, very serious things. But in general, the big problem is it hasn't worked. And so we shouldn't keep doing something that actually has not worked to teach young people better ways to deal with their feelings of aggression or their insubordination or their language choice.
A lot of the conversation about zero tolerance in schools is about zero tolerance for behavior of students. The thing that put it on our radar this week was involved a staff person. Do you see these kind of zero tolerance policies on language in this instance in our schools applied toward staff and teachers?
That's very unusual. So this story last week really did get my attention. But what I think it illustrates is a lack of contextualization. Just as that gentleman said, he has the right to tell a student, don't you use that word. That's an educational statement to a student. So it shouldn't fall under a zero tolerance policy because zero tolerance can be rather unthinking and silly sometimes in its applications, where students have been sent home for, you know, having a decongestant in their backpack, or they brought a toy that looks something like a weapon. And so it takes judgment away from educators, and that's not a good thing. And I think many people thought in the 90s, when these became very popular, that this would be a way to make sure it was really fair. Everybody would know the rules. But in fact, that's not what's happened. Students of color and students from low-income situations are still disproportionately affected by disciplinary actions.
Yeah, how did it go wrong that way? Because as you just said, the idea was, okay, we're going to take discretion out of it, so we'll take bias out of it, and all kids are going to be treated equally under the zero-tolerance policy. Why didn't it pan out that way?
Well, I think it didn't turn out this way based on some research that I haven't been personally involved in, but that I've been reviewing, is that it's the adults that need to change. The adults need to understand how to quickly de-escalate situations. And we have many programs out there that we have solid evidence that it works. Adults need to check on their own implicit bias. We have lots of evidence that the same behavior exhibited by a white affluent child does not result in suspension, but it does if it's by a poor black child. And that's not the kid so much. Both need to be disciplined some way, of course, but it's really how the adult is processing it. And I'm not saying this to blame anybody. We all need training. So we have lots of evidence-based programs in implicit bias training, in giving teachers tools to know how to create positive, supportive behavioral systems in their classrooms, and most importantly, how to get the whole school system and parents involved right from the beginning to help students live in an ecology that really shapes positive behaviors and rewards positive behaviors and catches negative behaviors very early and at very low levels. But we know what to do. We just haven't done it.
Well, as schools, some of them at least, retreat from zero tolerance, are they replacing it with the things you just said in a healthy way, or are we just moving on to something we're going to regret in 5-10 years?
Well, there's a movement nationally that I think is very positive. It's difficult, but it's called multi-tiered system supports, MTSS, another acronym for us to learn. And this really starts out with the notion that every child that walks through the front door of the school needs to be assessed and looked at for what's going to create thriving, what's going to be optimal learning. So it doesn't wait until a student misbehaves and put detention or suspension. It can be as simple, although this, nothing is simple. We found in our research that if we had kindergartners and we quickly assessed what did they know, what does a kid need to know to be a successful kindergartner, days of the week, recognize my name, colors, things like that. If we found students in our research that didn't know that on the first day of kindergarten, and we immediately swooped in and gave them that extra help, in fact, they could catch up with the other kindergartners. And, you know, the best predictor of things going wrong for a child in school is that they're not reading on grade level by third grade. So it's really important not to wait till you have, you know, some high school kid yelling the N-word, but to do something. You really want to be doing something from preschool on to third grade so they can be successful in their academics, because that's hugely important. And we know a whole bunch of other stuff now. We have some of this support systems can be digital. You know, not every kid can sit and in a classroom quiet, but if we give them time on the computer in a kind of gamified way to work on their math, they can do better and they can sit longer. We also know, we have research now, that we should have kids outside more. So I think schools across the country are at least writing this notion of multi-tiered systems of support into their overall district plans. Now, you've raised the important point, will they do it? This takes a lot of training, and it also takes adults in the system, including the parents and including community partners, to say, we have to be ready for our students. We can't just say, student, you're not ready for us.
We're talking to Jane Close Connolly with California State University Long Beach. She's with us to talk about zero tolerance policies in schools.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about zero tolerance policies? Are they clear and helps keep students in line, or are they oversimplified fixes that don't leave room for context? You can tweet at Central Time WPR. Maybe you're a student or a former student. Maybe you're a parent of a student who's been punished because of zero tolerance. Call in and tell us about it. 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org.
We'll continue the conversation and bring on another Wisconsin voice coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Keeley Boltina. We're picking up our conversation about schools and zero tolerance policies. Jane Close Connolly is with us, longtime educational psychology researcher and the current president of California State University, Long Beach.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. As a student, a teacher, or a parent, what do you think of zero tolerance policies in schools? Do you see them as being effective? Do you see better ways? Do you have a question for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. Want to add a Wisconsin perspective to the conversation? Harry Peterson was former UW-Madison Chancellor Donna Shalala's chief of staff. He's president emeritus of Western Colorado University. Harry, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
You wrote a piece on the Marlon Anderson firing for the Capital Times. I believe you had a kid who went to Madison West High School, the school in question.
30 years ago. That's correct.
Now, what when you look at this Marlon Anderson case, thinking back to your days in the area, what did you think of how the zero tolerance policy played out here?
Well, I have been troubled by the things that I've been reading over the last year, all of which, until this came to light, were anonymous situations in which very little attention was devoted, and I understand they wanted to protect the identity of the teacher involved, but nonetheless, the teacher ended up resigning or being fired. I'd like to add to the comments by your other guest, and I'm in enthusiastic agreement with her. She talks about assessing 5-year-olds when they come into a kindergarten and figuring out what's optimal for them. That's the opposite of zero tolerance, which is treats everyone alike. And I'm not faulting the teacher at West High who said very clearly, we treated Malin Anderson exactly the same as all the others. And so the policy was adhered to. The problem was this is a bad policy. And in fact, you can't treat everyone exactly alike because the situations are not alike and the people are not alike. And we have read, I cited in my column, the terrible situation that occurred in the 90s when about 25 or 26 states passed a zero-tolerance laws, 3 strikes and you're out. And so if people committed a third felony, they'd be in prison for life. And naturally, there were some cases of very bad people going to prison for a long time, but there would be a case of someone, a 65-year-old who stole a pizza. He hadn't broken the law for 30 years. He sold a pizza, and they want to send him off to prison in New York State for the rest of his life, which, of course, is horrendous. It also, I think, can, in some cases, weaponize the student. The student knows if I make this accusation toward a teacher, that person is gone. But one of the things I wanted to address as well is when I give talks about strategic planning and leading organizations, I tell them strategic plans are great, but if on Monday morning the people do not want to come to work, it doesn't make any difference what your plan is. They have to want to come to work. It has to be a good place to work. And I hear frequently from friends who have friends who are teachers, grandchildren who are teachers, children who are teachers, that it is a very demoralized place. That affects all of the students, and it frankly doesn't treat these professionals as professionals, and that's been one of the major issues we've been dealing with in Wisconsin for the last 10 years with the virtual elimination of the teachers' unions in Wisconsin. They've been quite demoralized, and there's some evidence that fewer young people are going into teaching, and this only adds to it. And the ironic thing is it's a liberal, a kind of an impulse, and I understand wanting to protect the students, but it really does not have that effect.
Harry, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us on this, and welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thank you.
That's Harry Peterson, formerly of UW-Madison, president emeritus of Western Colorado University. He wrote a piece on zero tolerance and the Marlon Anderson case in the Cap Times. Jane, following up on what Harry had to say, that concern about the impact of a zero tolerance policy on staff, on morale, and how that can spill over to the kids, too.
Yeah, it's a very good point. When the zero tolerance was first introduced, it was embraced very wildly, positively by teacher unions who felt like they were really being dumped on in terms of being expected to handle all sorts of situations that children brought from home and from their neighborhoods. So the answer in zero tolerance was get rid of the kid. But we know that that actually is not the answer. The answer is really support our teachers. Give them aids. Give them extra professional development. Give them coaching. Give them help. Nobody goes into teaching because they don't like children or they don't want the children in their class to succeed. But the answer is really to invest in the teacher core. And that could be certainly in salary, but it is also importantly in creating a whole ecology of support around each teacher. So she or he or they can be more effective with their students, who are quite heterogeneous now. I mean, you don't have a one-size-fits-all. You can't use a one-size-fits-all, as your previous guest said, when each child's coming in, you know, with very different circumstances.
Thanks again to Harry Peterson. We're talking about zero tolerance policies in schools. Jane Close Conley is with us from California State University, Long Beach. Now to your calls at 800-642-1234. Trish is with us in Racine. Trish, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Trish?
Well, I didn't hear all of the conversation because I just got off work a few minutes ago and I started listening. But I think that it's important, you know, they're talking about the zero tolerance policy, which could probably be good if it was, you know, thought about more. But for them to say that the teachers need more training and the adults, what they're not mentioning too much, and maybe they did but I missed it, is the parents need to be trained, because the parents seem to be thinking that they can be friends with their children and then send their children to school and the teachers have to parent them. And that's not right. I'm a parent. I raised my son, single mom, low income, and you have to be strict with your kids. You can't expect someone else to.
Trish, thanks for the call. Jane, you touched on the role of the parents earlier. What do you think of what Trish had to say?
Well, I think Trish has made an excellent point, and some of the research that we have is exactly about involving parents in situations where their students, their children are having difficulty at school, whether it's academic difficulty or behavioral difficulty. But just not every parent, unlike Trish, obviously she's got her act together, I can tell, not every parent knows what to do. They need education as well as their young children or their teenagers do. So these programs that have effectively involved parents have shown very positive outcomes. Now, I won't sugarcoat it. You can't get every parent to come in. But if you get 35% of the parents to come in, and that results in positive outcomes for their students, that's a big win. There's no easy answers on this. It's not like there's one thing that will work. So it's certainly getting parents involved and giving them the tools. Let me give you an example of that, too. Is we did a study in Santa Barbara, California, where we taught parents how to read to their students. Now, we were working on academic success here. And, you know, if you read a little book to your little kid, or even your toddler, you'd be saying, oh, that's the color blue. Do you see where the boy is? Do you see that flower? The parents we were working with didn't know how to do that. And we found that once we taught them how to read effectively and really have a conversation with their children vocabulary increased by 50% in just a 6-week period. So, that tells me that there are many parents out there willing to learn how to do things better. They don't know that it's important not just to set a kid in front of a TV set or with an iPad. And that's a role a school can play. But again, that means investing in schools to have professionals who can do that. We can't expect teachers to, you know, have another class for parents, you know, when the students go home.
Thanks for that call, Trish. We'll go to David now with us in Middleton. David, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Our family's just recently moved up here to Middleton, and so far we absolutely love the schools. The teachers seem to be great and everything. But I wanted to call in and talk about an experience that we had down in Missouri where we moved up from, and that was the zero tolerance policy taken to what I would say to an extreme, as previous callers had mentioned, and that being that, for example, if we talked about bullying, so if you have a child that is a bully and is tormenting another child, and the child defends himself, the zero tolerance policy that was administered was both of the children were disciplined. And that's when it tells me that it's now an excuse or being used as an excuse by the administration for the teachers not to do the right thing. It absolves them of liability, removes them from responsibility of having to get engaged and hear and listen and get involved with both sides and actually do the work that, you know, we would hope both as teachers and as parents we all do, is rise to our level of responsibility and do the right thing for our children.
David, thanks for the call, and welcome to Wisconsin, by the way. In our last few moments, Jane, your thoughts on lessons for what we heard from David here that we could be applying in schools?
Well, it's a great example. These punishments should not be meted out in some automatic kind of mindless way. Each situation must be examined. And that's what we're here for as educators, to educate students about how to do better. The bully needs to learn to control, negative emotion. And the target needs to figure out strategies to make him or herself less of a target. We know how to do that. But it does take a thoughtful, purposeful application of educational techniques, not just punishments.
Jane, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Sure. Happy to be here.
That was Jane Close Connolly, president of California State University, Long Beach, longtime researcher in educational psychology. She joined us today to talk about zero tolerance policies in schools for students and for staff after a recent incident at Madison West got national attention, some of the unintended consequences of zero tolerance, and ways to replace it.